This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. Each week, your hosts, Aaron Peterson, myself, Brian Williams, Scotty Clark, and Justin McCumber all come together to talk about movies, TV, and pretty much anything else we can think of in the entertainment world, although we try to avoid controversial topics. You can find everything about The Hollywood Outsider at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can find other podcasts at the website as well, or iTunes, or Stitcher, or TuneIn, or anything else you listen to a podcast on. We're out there. We are in the world. This week we have a little bit of a special episode because of the holiday. We took the week off. Brian, Justin, Scott, they got the week off. I didn't. I'm still here trying to get this up here for you guys. But they're off enjoying their holiday, and I know you guys are enjoying your holiday, but we didn't want to leave you with nothing. Basically, whenever we get to a holiday where we take the week off, we like to leave you kind of with a best of. So this is going to be volume one. Now, what I mean by volume one is like the first quarter of the year, kind of pull from those episodes and the favorites of those episodes. What were people talking about? What did people like? What was the most downloaded? And so I've kind of got those in that order, went through them a little bit. This bottle of scotch helped me out a lot. So I've got everything I need for you guys, hopefully, to be entertained. And I'm going to do that for you right now. Now, remember, website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or leave us a review if you haven't. Same thing with Stitcher. Give us a thumbs up if you're listening there. But instead of me just rambling, let me get right into it. First topic we're going to bring up is disaster movies. On episode 131, we talked about disaster movies because we love train wrecks. We love destruction. We love visceral thrills. And we love to talk about it. There's a lot of humor in this bit. There's a lot of entertainment and a lot of facts. And I'm sure we get at least 30% of the facts wrong. But at least we try to be entertaining. So it seemed to be a pretty popular episode. Hope you guys enjoy this. Here's our take on disaster movies. All right, now let's go to our from the outside in topic. This week we're talking about disaster movies. With Pompeii flopping and many of them just not doing too well lately. Honestly, the disaster movie has not been doing well as of late. Why do they keep making these things? I mean, what really is drawing people in?
I think it's just the easy way to get people in the theater as far as seeing some kind of spectacle or scene on the big screen. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't go to the theater to see movies unless it's big, something's blowing up or there's...
Guilty.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of movies, though, man. I'm talking about people that will not go see any movie. They're like, that's not worth going to see that in the theater. I can wait for that one.
Brian's actually one of those, yeah.
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 And you throw in a disaster movie, it's an easy excuse to blow shit up and make something pretty on the screen or something that people want to see. So I think that's why they keep making them.
That's exactly my point, is that the visuals, especially with CGI and all the special effects technology there is out there right now, you can do so much more with these type of movies. Unfortunately, usually the story is shit. But it's just an excuse to throw a lot of really cool pictures, blow up buildings like, you know, that have never been, you know, blown up or whatever before, you know, the White House, whatever. So it's, it's just neat. You know, you're watching these landmarks and fall and crumble and burn, whatever the case is. And it's really neat. I mean, you get...
You're really into... It's really neat to see these landmarks that you love blow up.
It is.
Well,
though.
It does. I mean, it does touch an emotional chord with you because, you know, a lot of people connect with, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge or the Grand Canyon fills up with water, you know, whatever the case is. It's just, there's a lot of people connected with those things, and it's neat to kind of see that. I mean, it's not so much you're happy that a tornado was ripping through Los Angeles, but it is interesting to see because it's never been done before.
It makes it feel more real. When it's something that you've either experienced like on TV or even in person, to see it get all torn up like that, it makes it feel like this could really happen.
And you get to experience that, you know, in the safety of the theater without having to actually live through it, mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, what connects more with you guys as film goers? The spectacle like you talked about or the story it's based around? When you guys go to see this, what really is drawing you in?
Well, it has to be both. I mean, that was my problem with Pompeii. It had a decent story, but it just didn't have the oomph of the disaster behind it to really give that story the framing that it needed. If it doesn't, I mean, you can have shit blowing up all you want, but if there's really nothing compelling about the characters involved, then I mean, I feel like I'm just watching some kind of National Geographic little documentary. I need something more. But if you've got something that's got great spectacle, but it's just got a terrible story around it, like a Dante's Peak, well, you know, then you fail there too. You got to have both.
Yeah, I guess I'm more about the story. The spectacle doesn't draw me in. It never does. I guess I'm one of the few. It's neat and looks good and everything else, but if I go there and the story's stupid, I guess the hardest thing the most complicated thing for me is the story versus what actually happens. Whenever you go see one of these movies, it's so hard to get into it because it feels so ridiculous. I mean, they're trying to paint this picture of this reality, or this real situation. This could happen, and try to throw you into the middle of it. But nobody reacts ever like it's remotely real. You know, I mean, everybody does the stupidest thing. You know, they're always going back for somebody that they should just honestly leave behind. Fuck them. You need to get out. You've got your little kid. Let's go back for mom. Mom wouldn't want you to go back. Mom would want you to save that kid. I'm almost out of town, but man, the lava's coming. We better go back and get mom. You know, it's stupid shit like that.
This coming from the two guys who love Fast and the Furious and Transformers.
That's different. I have a... They always paint these as being some kind of real life situation. Most of them. Maybe not recently. Recently, they've been going like just crazy with them. I mean, mm-hmm. now they're ridiculous. Lava in L.A., come on. But the old ones like Towering Inferno, Poseidon mm-hmm. Adventure, stuff like that. It was supposed to be like real life situations. And that was how they roped you in. And because that's where they started, that is what makes it so hard for me to get into them. I still see
them. Scott, are you claiming that Dom's storyline isn't compelling for you?
Or isn't possible?
Dom's.
Or isn't reality?
On Fast and Furious.
I don't even remember the story.
Sounded like it was, that what movies was all spectacle and no story.
It was.
It's not really a deep story.
It's not a deep story, but the characters are fun. Their interactions with each other are fun. And so therefore, the story side of things, the character side, that's taken care of because you got a great ensemble of people doing really fun work. And then you've got a cool spectacle that they're all involved in. Win-win. It ain't Shakespeare, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. And that's kind of to my point, too, is I don't even have to really have the story element. I have no problem shutting my brain off and just going in and seeing some stuff blow up or see something pretty in the screen or see something I've never seen before.
See, I can't. Like, there's movies like 2012 when that came out, and I'm just like, what? This is so dumb. And it's hard. It's hard for me to watch these movies where they're supposed to take place in the real, real world.
Yeah, but that movie felt like it was making fun of itself.
You know, you gotta suspend, you know, reality a little bit.
Disbelief. It's just hard to do in disaster movies. For whatever reason, for me, it's very hard to do in those kind of movies.
I'm with you.
What about you, Brian?
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's the pretty pictures. It's the cool. It's the cool special effects.
All right, I'm not alone.
I'm that shallow. I mean, I don't give a shit. That's what draws me in. That's, you know, yeah. I mean, if it had a halfway decent story, that would be just gravy on my mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. But the fact, just, you know, like I said before, you know, most times it's weather disasters, you know, and to see just walls of water just rushing down, you know, Times Square, or, you know, or things like that, you just won't see. That, man, that gets me excited.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys ever think we've blown up enough monuments?
Like,
no. Did you say no? Everybody, no.
Well,
no.
What monuments are left?
Great Wall of China. Has that been blown up yet? I can't remember. I think
it was Godzilla needs to stomp across that.
There you go. Yeah, send them up in China. Japan would be so happy.
What about the pyramids? I know they were covered in snow one time, but
I think Transformers did some damage.
Yeah, wasn't the one with the robot testicles climbing on top of that one?
Yeah.
Mount Rushmore, has that ever been done?
Is there any, like, I guess, trope of disaster movies that has just been done to death that you guys would not want to see, since you're all fans of them? Is there something you're sick of seeing in disaster movies?
The whole concept of people sitting and staring at the disaster instead of turning and running? I don't know that I would watch.
Are you going to outrun the tidal wave?
I'm damn well try.
Fuck it. Just sit back with a drink. We're all going to die. I'm going to die drunk. You're going to die tired. I will go back, though, on something I just said. I am sick to death of seeing the Statue of Liberty get destroyed. That, to me, that one has been done enough.
Yeah, it has. It has. And to Scott's point, that's exactly what always takes me out of them, because they're always doing the stupid shit. You know, stop it. Oh, look. You know, Twister, which I love Twister. I think Twister is one of the most fun disaster movies. I really do.
Yeah, that's No Moon.
Yeah.
That's Space Station.
And they're just, everything they do in it is just so against what an actual tornado chaser does. I mean, obviously, the people that went, that actually did what Twister did, they died. So that's a really bad plan. Most
well,
of what.
They chase tornadoes. Isn't that what tornado chasers do?
They don't generally go right in the middle of it. You know, generally.
But also, think about it. I mean, hours. Twister came out when? 95, 96?
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
All right.
Been a while.
The internet really wasn't
was attractive.
You know, wasn't as near as big as it is now. You know, the idea of a storm chaser was foreign to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah.
So there nobody, you know, we've seen, all of us have watched so many footage of, you know, whatever, the Weather Channel or Discovery Channel, whatever. We're all kind of desensitized to it. So at this point, yeah, it's totally absurd. But in, you know, what was it? Almost 20 years ago, it wasn't. I mean, that was nobody, you know, the majority of the population had never seen that type of stuff. So, hey, you know, watching a cow fly around in circles was pretty cool.
Another cow.
Especially when it mooed.
Moo. All right, guys. Well, what would you say has been, for you, the worst disaster films or the worst disasters they use for the film? Brian,
I've got to go with the great Tommy Lee Jones and Volcano.
That's a good.
That was just absolutely horrible. I mean, if Anne Hesh and Tommy Lee Jones hadn't signed on to do this, I think this would have been a sci-fi movie. So
you didn't like the funneling of the lava. I'll never get tired of that. They funnel lava.
It's been years. Yeah. I don't remember it at all.
It's very dumb.
Funnel it.
I mean, it ranks it. Yeah, it's bad. It's
they
bad.
They basically, because there's, you know, underground volcano, all these scientists never picked up on before, but thankfully Tommy Lee Jones is around. This volcano erupts and he figures out a way to get the lava away from LA by funneling it.
It's blowing a ditch.
Blowing a ditch. It's so stupid. You can't even think about it. Because you
what
think
about
it too long.
Touching ending where everybody's covered in ash and the little child says, they all look the same.
Oh, yeah. There's no more color. It's LA.
There's no more color in this world.
Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It didn't change anything.
I have to see this now.
No, you don't.
You don't.
No,
you don't. You don't. Well, you know what? This might be a movie that's so dumb it's fun. I don't know. It's been so long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. I just remember feeling like I was robbed of about an hour and a half of my life. 2012 was a bad one. Also, there was a lot of spectacular visuals, and if you were to cut those out, kind of cram them together for about a 5-minute shot, I would probably be fine with that. But it was almost like it was just like every disaster movie that was rolled into one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of crammed in there, and it's almost like you take the best parts of all these, you know, hot celebrities. And you make one person and they turn out really ugly. You know?
That's a really good analogy.
Yeah, I like it.
Plus,
that's just kind of what I think about that movie. It's just like, the premise was good. I just don't, you know, John Cusack didn't help it either.
Didn't it seem to that whole movie, like in his mind, he was just counting the zeros on his paycheck? That's really all it felt for me. He didn't seem like he was even trying.
That movie was long as hell, too.
I wish the world would have been.
Wasn't it like 2.5 hours or something like that?
It was longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, it was way longer.
For me, the worst one that I thought of was that M. Night Shyamalan classic, The Happening.
Oh, God! Yeah, that would count. Yeah.
Where people are just like dropping like flies unexpectedly. And, you know, that movie was such a turd. I mean, and Mark Wahlberg's a good actor.
Say hello to your mother for me.
And he just... Everything he felt, I mean, I know it was kind of done intentionally, but it just didn't work. Like it wasn't supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek movie at all.
He was talking to plants, Scott.
Yeah, I know. Just that was awful.
What about you, Justin?
Oh God, you know, when you go into one of these disaster movies, you kind of have to go in with your tongue in your cheek a little bit, and you have to really suspend a lot of your disbelief. And I know that, you know, you guys know that when it comes to movies, I am one of the easiest to please.
Yep.
But there was a fucking movie that came out 10 years ago that offended me on an intellectual level so much that I watched the film and I left furious.
Was it a movie about the Bible?
Oh, God, no. Nothing about that. No, it stars Hilary Swank.
The core. I already know.
Stanley Tucci, Bruce Greenwood, and Aaron Eckhart.
Mm-hmm. Never seen
That's
that.
A talented cast, and yet this film was the worst piece of shit I have ever seen. Yes, it is the core, the dumbest idea. Okay, apparently the Earth's liquid nickel core has stopped spinning. I'm sorry, it's solid nickel core that's surrounded by a liquid core has stopped spinning, and because of that, our magnetic sphere that surrounds the Earth is disappearing, and so people are dying from rays that are getting through, cosmic rays that normally wouldn't. So their fucking big idea is to, luckily someone's been working on a vessel that can dig down into the Earth.
They so got a plan.
Thank God someone's been, you know, Johnny on the spot with that. But they're going to take this vessel, dig it down into the liquid core, and then they're going to drop a series of nukes that, when they go off in a sequence, will cause that I don't even know the right word for it, huge iron core to start spinning again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their big fucking idea. They're going to nuke it.
And something that dumb, kind of like Armageddon has some dumb points to it. But they always seem like they're having fun.
They never take it too seriously.
Right. This movie, everybody is so... Like Aaron Eckhart, which I think he's a good actor, but he is way too serious way too often.
Oh, everybody here is going to save the world. It's all on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. They play it for as much drama as they can. And normally I can let stupid science go. I could not with this. It was just so idiotic that anybody would even think, maybe they'll believe this, or maybe they'll buy it. No, I didn't. The acting was shitty. The story was shitty. This film offended me, and if I ever find Joan Emile, who directed it, I will kick him in the nuts. That's what he's got coming to him.
I think the Academy went to Hilary Swank's house and said, give me the Oscars back.
Oh, they should have. They said, you were in that? Give it back.
You just... It's on. I just looked it up. It's on Netflix. I'm totally watching this. I've never seen it.
It is so dumb.
And it's not even so good. Dumb. So bad. It's good. It's just bad. Awful.
When you made the sale, stop selling it, man.
I
have to see it.
I think I can top it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can. How about Christian Slater playing Broken Arrow in the rain for like 2 hours?
I never saw this one.
Oh, what was it? Hard Rain?
Hard Rain.
That's, I remember that one.
That's your noir title, Hard Rain.
Hey, that had Morgan Freeman too, didn't it?
Yeah, it had two people that should know harder. Better. That's why it was harder.
That's right.
It was so dumb and such a wasted cast. And it actually could have been all right. Like, the underlying plot wasn't too bad, but to center it around a flood and... The entire movie is just them dancing around water. That's all it is. Just trying to swim around. Never makes sense. They never have the real problems you should have in a flood. It's just awful movie. And Christian Slater, I actually am a fan of Christian Slater. I even like Cuffs. I'll admit it. But he just did himself no favors. This is why he's doing crappy CBS shows right now. Hard Rain. That's
this is why he did Alone in the Dark.
Exactly. This is exactly why. That's probably one of the worst. And the core was actually on my list, but I had a backup.
With
a side of ugh. So what is your favorite disaster movie and why? And yes, Justin, you can have one honorable mention. What is your favorites?
I got an honorable mention too, so.
Everybody gets an honorable mention.
My favorite, hands down, is Deep Impact. I know I get a lot of flack from all the Armageddon fans out there that love that movie.
Because it was the first black president?
Yeah.
Wait, are you ugging a black president? You
no,
racist.
No, I'm ugging this film.
I love Deep Impact. I loved Armageddon too. Don't get me wrong. I loved
There's
Armageddon.
A sequel? I don't recall.
Armageddon 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Harry Stamper wasn't in it.
Armageddon, Ip Man.
Armageddon, colon. Insert whatever. No, I really liked Deep Impact. It made the story feel real for me, and there was a lot of emotion to it. I liked Elijah Wood. I really liked Lily Sobieski too, so that helps. But I
she's such a weird actress.
She was a child in that film.
I don't know.
Apparently,
so was I when it came out.
Oh, that's all right. All right.
All right.
But yeah, it's actually, I think, the only disaster movie that I actually own on disc, and I watch every now and again. It's a movie that I can pop in and enjoy every time I watch it. And there's a lot of heart to it, and it seems like genuine heart as opposed to cheesy heart that I got from Armageddon. So I'm not trying to stir up controversy.
When they all died at the end, I was like, yes!
Wow. My honorable mention was Independence Day. I never get tired of seeing the White House blow up. And
I'm with you, man. I love that movie. I don't know
too.
Why Justin doesn't seem to, but...
No. I have a hard time calling that a disaster movie.
Oh, it's a disaster movie.
It's too sci-fi
no.
for Justin Stanley.
Well, yes. it's like saying, okay, then by that, you know, should The Avengers be a disaster movie?
Should Tremors
because
be a
New
disaster
York
movie?
Because New York gets fucked up.
I double-checked this. I checked on several
nice,
sites.
Scott.
It is... What'd you say?
Is it should Tremors be a disaster movie?
I verified several places, no, thought it was a disaster movie. So I would say absolutely. It's a disaster movie. It qualifies.
For me, a disaster movie has to – I mean, Armageddon is a disaster movie, and that's sci-fi. Mm. It's not the sci-fi element that, for me, takes it out. It's more
– natural.
I guess for me, disaster, I like it to be more nature or a natural thing as opposed to
like a
man-made
meteor,
or animated.
Like a meteor hurling at the Earth?
Yeah, but...
Right, that's nature. That's the universe fucking us.
I see, but for a disaster movie, to me, it's something that gives you that sense of dread. Like,
and ship blows up.
Even before that, the early scenes in Independence Day when Will Smith walks out and sees these mile-wide spaceships just busting through the atmosphere and coming out through the clouds... That
so
was an off-putting feeling.
The World's a disaster movie?
It could be. Sure. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm totally with them. And by the way, they were the first one.
Totally wrong.
Stop talking. They were the first ones to be blowing up monuments. So I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You just need to shut your dumb mouth.
It counts.
You're getting dumber by the second.
Guess what? It's your own moment. Justin, what is your favorite?
That was apparently his favorite.
All right.
Oh, shit.
You're losing valuable Justin time. Go.
Armageddon. You know, it is cheesy, and it is over the top, melodramatic, soap opera, yet I fall for it every time. I don't know if it's, you know, the music that's involved or all the actors or the slow motion shots and the flag waving. I don't know, but it got me in the theater. I cried at the end, and when I watch it on video, I cry again because him talking with Liv Tyler and her calling him daddy and him just saying, you know, I love you, little girl, and I'm going to miss
alert.
You. Blah, blah. Oh, my God, I cried like a baby. It's just good, cheesy, fun. If people can hate on Bay or me or whoever they want, all they want. For me, this is cheesy fun at its best.
Oh, I love the movie.
I like Independence Day better, Scott.
All my bags.
What's your honorable mention?
You know, I actually, and it doesn't come up all that often, but The Day After Tomorrow, I actually liked quite a bit. And maybe it's because I haven't seen The Cold used in a disaster movie that often. Usually it's a fire or a volcano or a fiery object from space. But they actually have everything, you know, basically what's happened this winter seemed to be happening in that movie. And it was really kind of entertaining, and I don't mention it often. Nobody else does, but it was a quality little movie.
I love Dennis Quaid. That movie sucked.
I love Dennis Quaid.
I actually considered that one, but the fact that there's like two or three scenes that are just utterly ridiculous, it just takes me out of the movie.
The wolves.
I had to drop it down a notch.
The entire plight of Jake Gyllenhaal in general.
I like Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, I've actually mentioned, it's been a while since we've talked about it, but I've actually mentioned this before. And it's the scene where Dennis Quaid, they're walking, him and his two cohorts, and his friend falls through, you know, falls through the ice slash glass, and it turns out they're on the top of the roof, a glass roof of a shopping mall. And I mean, it's the ice is thin enough for him to walk through, you know, to fall through that, but yet it's thick enough for Dennis Quaid to chunk down a big ice pick and hang on and keep them, the rest of them, from falling. Stupid.
I actually saw that movie, Justin. I was in Dallas when I saw that movie in the theater. There was a big IMAX theater there. My wife and I went to see it, and we walked out of the theater, and it was the worst storm. And we're supposed to be in Texas, where it's supposed to be dry all the time, and I could not see 6 feet in front of my car. Walk out of this movie seeing that, and then come out to that, have to drive home, was pretty interesting.
Brian, it's your turn. Wow.
My favorite is one that there's been a few before this that came out, but I think this one really set the standard for what a disaster movie should be, and that's Towering Inferno.
Yeah, good call.
Never seen that one.
Oh, I mean, just it had a phenomenal cast. I mean, Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, even people like Bing Crosby and Richard Chamberlain.
Really created the genre, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think Earthquake came out before it. I think Airport came out before it. You know, and but this is the one that really kind of set the bar. And this is actually one that really had a really good drama. I mean, you get so attached to some of these characters in the, you know, in the movie, and there's some, you know, you just get, I don't know. Even I think O.J. Simpson is in this. I mean, it's just a huge, huge cast.
I heard he killed it.
Highly. I
mean, there's a fire.
Did you hear Scott?
No.
I hear he killed it.
He doesn't do much. He just drives around the building in a way the whole time. But...
picking up gloves.
If you can find it on some place like Netflix or even, you know, some kind of rental place or Redbox or something, definitely check that one. And my honorable mention is Armageddon. Just basically reiterate, you know, what Justin said. It was just that movie is just, I mean, it's so old at this point, and I can still watch it. And I don't care where it is. If I stumble across it on TV, I'm stopping and watching it.
All right. Well, mine, Titanic. It's my easy pick. Mm. I just absolutely love that story. I felt for those people. I love all the backlash it gets now because it's so hip to hate on that movie. And it is. I mean, people.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. Because it was so popular. I mean, it's ridiculously popular. Made so much money. It was on everything, everywhere, every magazine, every TV article, every TV news item. Everything was about Titanic for the longest time. And I think it's just hip to hate on it now. It's just one of the most pristine, complex, and well-woven pieces of cinema I've ever seen. Not just disaster, not just love. It's just the perfect movie to me. Mm-hmm. You know, everything about it works. And I have zero shame in that. I absolutely love it. And the way that they captured an actual disaster and didn't make it feel like it's a movie just worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
So my honorable mention is Twister, because tornadoes are awesome. How about that, huh? Oh, that was good times. Good times. Also, did have some people ask what we thought of Mockingjay, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, since we weren't going to do a full episode this week after it came out. And I will tell you, Justin, at the point of recording, hasn't seen it yet. Brian saw it. He liked it. I think he said somewhere 7, 7.5 out of 10. Scott did not like it. He thought it was really boring. For him, he felt like it was a lot of filler. And I did like it. I didn't like it as much as the other two movies, but if $10 is the full price of admission, I'd give it about a $6.50. It was good. It was entertaining. Probably could have been shortened about, I don't know, just a little bit, 20 minutes maybe. But I will tell you, as an unabashedly ridiculous Jennifer Lawrence fan, she is still very pretty. And she sang to me during the movie. I loved it. I appreciated that. She might have sang, you know, out loud. You might have heard her, but she was singing to me. So I want to thank you, J-Law, if you're listening. Really, really appreciate that. Let's get back to the topics at hand. We are into the next topic, which is from episode 134. And the topic that you're going to hear now is how far is too far? That's a little bit deeper, but it's still entertaining, still funny. We talk about how far can a character go before you just don't resonate with that character anymore. You just can't follow whatever their path is or whatever choices they're making. You know, they've just gone too far for you. We got a lot of feedback on this episode. This is actually an episode where we got a lot of emails, a lot of thoughts and concerns and people offering their own opinions or not really happy with ours. So hope you enjoy it. It's a nice little throwback to earlier in the year. Here's our take on how far is too far.
Good deal. Well, next up is From the Outside In. That's where our topic this week is, whether it's movies or TV, Hollywood has gone very dark in the last decade or so, so making a lot of our heroes more and more shady. So we're going to talk about that. Now, Justin, how far does a character have to go for you to pretty much no longer root for them?
Well, you know, I'd like to say that it's some kind of high-minded notion of, you know, they have to act against their character type. And really, this is more of a writer thing than an actor deal. But, you know, really when a character goes beyond – I don't mind a character breaking a law as long as there's a good reason for it. Because, you know, we are just talking about a movie or a television show, not real life. But if they, you know, if they go against the law for their own selfish gain, if they hurt someone for no other reason than to hurt them, at that point, I can no longer watch that character with the same sense of enthusiasm that I probably did before they did this bad shit.
Scotty?
For me, anytime a character starts hurting or doing harm to children, no longer.
Like a babysitter trying to smother it?
Yes, it sure. Happens. I mean, I just, you throw kids in the mix. I mean, that's probably a lot of me being a teacher.
That's when I perk up.
Or just a human. I don't know. Just,
because basically you're saying you didn't care until like August.
Right.
I'm all right with you smothering little children. But once I became a teacher, I got to draw the line.
It's not at all what I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm putting the line in the sand. As of August, no more.
A teacher's got to have standards, you know.
No, I just there's something I don't know. I just it really makes me more uncomfortable watching a character on the screen do horrible things to kids. It just really rubs me the wrong way. That and characters that just wind up making decisions that just don't make any sense. That you can tell the writer just more or less did it just to make the story interesting. There's there's no way this character would make that decision. That just, okay, you lost me. I'm done. So.
And that happens all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Hurting animals, I would add that. Fuck kids. You kick a puppy, we got words. Oh
my God. You know what I can't stand? And I think it's an unfortunate TV trope. It happens a lot in television. Rape. They use rape to get things going and to get stories told and to get you immediately on the side of a character.
I like rape.
Hey, you actually made a joke on it. Nice job. Enjoy the emails. I personally can't stand if a character does that. And I can't remember what the show was, but stop laughing.
Rape, arson, murder, and rape. I like rape.
You said rape twice.
Oh,
I just watched that for the first time. So come on,
tell them what movie. Tell them what movie you're talking about, so nobody thinks it's us.
It's from Blazing Saddles.
Okay. Oh, God. But that is the one thing. If a character does that, there's no coming back. You can't come back. Harming a child or a weaker person, people that pick on, you know, elderly, retarded. Yeah, I said retarded, developmentally delayed. People that have any kind of developmental issues or just are generally slow. I have a hard time thinking someone is worth sympathizing with once they do that, because I realize what their character is, I guess. Bullies, people that bully, you know, especially TV movies, you know, there are several characters where it's caricature, but there are a lot of shows where the main character is also a bully. I mean, Breaking Bad's a prime example. Walter White is just a huge freaking bully. And it's really hard to ever get on him. I mean, once he loses you, it's really hard to ever come back on his side because he continues to be a bully. And it's characters like that I have a hard time coming back from. What about jokes or language? Before we move on, what about jokes or language that a character is there anything that somebody can say or a joke they can tell where you're like, oh, that's too far?
No,
not really.
If they thank Jesus.
What's, did you say if they thank Jesus?
Yeah, if they look up and go, when do you got? Nah, fuck you.
That's why you don't watch football, huh?
That's, I hate it. Where was your Jesus when you fumbled? Where was he then? Don't pick and choose.
Oh, man. Well, all right, Aaron, just kind of the flip side of that coin. When can a character not go far enough? Where he kind of, like, just because he didn't, like, you didn't get there, you know, and he kind of loses you forever.
When there's a threat or any kind of immediate threat or any kind of a threat to a child or weaker person and nobody does anything, like they don't do anything about it, I just lose respect for characters like that. It happens all the time. Walking Dead is a prime example, and I'm not going to talk about the recent episode. We're not going to spoil that, so please don't even think I am. I'm talking about Rick, who's the main character of the show, right? A lot of people like Rick. They think he's great. I fucking hate Rick. I hate him. As a dad, he's a dipshit. He's an awful father, and I can never get behind him, even though I like the actor. I like Andrew Lincoln. He's a good actor. But it's he 100% of the time does exactly what's wrong for his kids, even though
hey.
He does hey, all the time.
Look, I'm not saying he doesn't do the wrong or he doesn't do the right thing, whatever the case is. I'm not saying I don't agree with you, but the dude has had a lot. He's had not just the pressure of his wife and kid and soon to be born kid and / presently born kid.
Yeah, same kid, right?
Same kid. But he's had the pressure of keeping that whole group together, moving them from place to place, convincing Herschel to let them move in with him, then taking all of their group and once they got kind of scattered and getting them back together and then moving into the prison and you got the governor stuff. The dude's had a lot of shit to deal with.
And I'm telling
more,
you.
More than Daryl.
I am telling you.
More than any of the other women.
From
I'm
a
just saying,
dad's, shut
cut
up.
Cut the guy some slack.
No, I will not. From a dad's perspective, your kids, in that situation where you have an apocalypse, first thing you should think about is what's best for them.
Yeah, but if your kid is Carl.
Fucking breeders.
No argument.
Ditch the kid. They're just going to drag you down, man.
Hey, I'm not lying. I'm thinking Judith could probably stand a good leaving by the side of the road. But since he is the dad and he's got to take care of him, he should do a better job of it. He's constantly leaving. I mean, he left Carl every freaking chance he got. Like, every chance he gets, he's like, hey, Carl, I got to go into town and do something that's going to risk my life, even though we're not sure about what's going on with your mom. So take care. Yeah. If I had a kid that would never stay in the goddamn house, I would too.
I'd have thrown the kid to the walkers. Slow him down.
You know what else before you go to anybody else? I hate people on TV or movies that constantly bitch about stuff and changes that need to be made, but they never make them. Like Carrie Bradshaw, Sex and the City. She's a prime example. Constantly, every week, bitch, doing them. My wife made me watch that goddamn show.
My face looks like a horse. I'm not doing anything about it.
Exactly. And never,
why are women such sluts?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to keep sleeping around. Yay. Yeah. And nothing ever changes. Why don't people treat me right? Oh, because I keep going out with people that don't treat me right. It's just stuff like that. I hate that.
I am not saying that all women are sluts. I'm saying that's what Carrie Bradshaw said on the show. Before I get letters.
That's not what he says off the air, ladies. Yeah. Yeah. Start writing. Scott at thehollywoodoutsider.com. He likes rape.
The ones that I had a hard time with this because usually I don't really want to see a character go darker and do more despicable things. But I think what does bother me when a character doesn't go far enough is when a character forgives too easily in a show. Give an example or a movie. Give an example. I'm in the process of getting caught up on Sons of Anarchy right now.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of stuff that happens in that show, and it takes about 2 or 3 episodes for a lot of those guys to go, well, okay.
They just bro it off.
Yeah, they just more or less just like shrug it off like no big deal. If some of that stuff happened in real life, I know people that would never harm a fly that would be going to town on somebody for doing the things they did in that show.
In Scott's world, what does going to town mean exactly?
Yeah, because I was thinking something totally probably different than what you were intending.
They would be jacking somebody up.
And again, I'm a little confused.
A
Jenna should have been killed several times over by Jack alone.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, there's no reason Gemma should be alive.
There's no reason
Hypothetically she is in season 6, if you're not caught up.
I'm at the end of season 5.
Okay.
There's no reason that Clay should still be alive for so many reasons.
He's a horrible person.
It's just awful.
I'll tell you, I couldn't think of Jack with this.
I mean, characters going too far, sure. Not going far enough. That's a harder one. Because usually in these shows, the writers don't fear going too far. It's always the, you know, especially nowadays, let's take them further. Let's go darker. I really don't have anything for not going far enough. I mean, really, this is like the antithesis of the Jack Bauer. There is nothing that man would not do for his love of country and duty. I mean, he would put electrodes to your testicles if that's what it was required to get to get everything solved. So, yeah, I don't know if I've ever really seen too many instances of somebody not going far enough.
Hey, what about the Transformers? You think by now they could figure out a way to get off our fucking planet? That ain't going far enough, is it?
Well, they don't have a rocket ship.
That's what it is.
It's been 30 years. They can figure it out by now.
Apparently not, Brian.
Well, we'll see what they make up.
Maybe they need Mark Wahlberg to help them.
I'm sure. All right, well.
This is how I'm going to pay for your college. No, you're not. She's going to pay for that through stripping.
Tell your mama say hi. All right, so, you know, there's always.
I love a happening reference.
All right. What's been a moment or two where you're watching a movie or TV show and the character you were once a big fan of kind of you just lost interest in because of where that character went? Scott?
Well, we kind of already mentioned it, and I will preface this by saying that I am not caught up on the current season of the show, but Carl from Walking Dead, first season, I felt bad for him. He's a kid. His mom's sleeping around. He's in the zombie apocalypse kind of thing. Kind of wanted to cheer him on, the young kid rising up, growing up in this. And then by the end of the second season, I just was praying for a zombie to eat his face. He is the epitome of making dumb decisions and doing things that don't make any sense to me.
It's genetic, apparently.
I would argue with Brian and say that Rick has gone through a little bit more than Carl has. And
wait a minute.
I mean, at 10 years old, you're not exactly making great life choices.
You're saying that the grown-ass man has gone through more than the poor little kid who doesn't know what's going on. He's suffering with his mom fucking a new guy. His dad's missing. The zombie apocalypse.
Mom needs love, too.
Yeah, but
he needs to know that.
Hey, Rick woke up and all this zombie crap's going on. He didn't know what the heck was going on. Wandered around Atlanta. Didn't know anything about his family. Finally finds him. Finds out his wife's banging his best friend. Best friend tries to kill him. His son is a little shit. Everybody else is freaking out. He's trying to keep them all together and keep the thing going. That's a lot to deal with. So, yeah, he went through more than little shitbird Carl.
Why don't you just get the Rick fan club going?
I just might.
Well, you're right there in Georgia. That's probably why.
I should state right off the bat, though, that just because I don't like a character doesn't mean that they're still not compelling.
Mm-hmm, that's fair.
There are a lot of characters. You know, we already mentioned Breaking Bad. Walter White, no, he is not a good person. Jesse, really, in a lot of ways, is not a good person.
Thank you for saying that. A lot of people miss that he mm-hmm. did a lot of horrible things, too.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of bad people, but they're still compelling. Same thing with Sons of Anarchy, a lot of their characters. And for me, the one that came to mind is Mad Men. You know, I really wanted to like Don Draper. He is handsome, charismatic, smart, yet he's also a horrible philanderer and a liar. So, no, as a person, I don't like Don Draper in the least little bit. But he is fucking compelling as shit. And that's why I keep watching the show season after season. But when he first cheated on his wife, that's one sin. You know, smack your kids around all you want, whatever. Cheat on your wife for no fucking reason other than you just want to get some strange. Then I've got no love for you at all. And you are forever tarnished.
Wow. Look at you, moral police. Wow.
Yeah, right.
Well, I got a couple. Episode 3 of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith. as much as I didn't necessarily love those movies, I was always interested in like the payoff, you know, for Darth Vader and how that was going to, how Anakin becomes Darth Vader. It was still always intriguing to me. I was still behind the character because of, wow, that's a tragic story. And if it was told right, it could be such a horrifically tragic story. After he killed those little Jedi kids for like no reason whatsoever, just randomly, oh, I'm so mad, I'm going to kill some Jedi kids. I was done.
He killed children.
No, he killed children for no reason. Like he just like it was almost a matter of like 10 seconds. He just snapped and decided, I'm going to go kill a bunch of Jedi kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mad. I'm going to go beat up a bunch of kids.
Yeah, no, beat them. No, I'm going to kill them. It was
he killed them at the behest of Emperor Palpatine.
It was way too rushed. It was kind of like a mix of a horrible action mixed with really weak writing. And it just didn't work for me. So it was really, I've never come back from that. The love I had for that character is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I still like the movies. I still like Darth Vader to a degree, but I don't love him as a character as I did before that movie. Because I just thought that was one of the worst written scenes and performed scenes in history. Jaime Lannister, in the very first episode of Game of Thrones, they can redeem his ass all they want. He pushed a little kid out a frickin' balcony window. Right after he was doing his sister. There's no redemption there, as far as I'm concerned. You don't come back from that. No.
His sister's kind of hot. I'd push a kid out a window for that.
You don't want to get some strange.
But you'll hang somebody for cheating on her wife.
Well, yes. I didn't say my morals were had to make sense.
What if your wife's your sister?
Oh, wait, what?
Oh, then I'd be living next door to you.
All right, the last one is Spike on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I absolutely loved that character. Loved Spike. I thought he was just so cool. And then he tried to rape Buffy. And after that, nothing he did. And even though he went on this nice journey to find his soul and everything else, I just could never buy back into him.
Mine's pretty quick and easy. It's basically the cast of Heroes. The whole dang show. When all of them came together, that was, you know, you had the cheerleader and you had Hero and the cop and all this stuff. And you had the them dealing, you know, it was like, wow, this is what it would almost be like in a real world. If all of a sudden you had some powers and didn't know whether to show them off or whether to hide them, record them, just, you know, wow, how far can I push this talent? And then it just got dumb. Mm-hmm. And it just, there were so many different threads. It was just throwing too much at me, I guess. I just lost interest in all of them.
All right. Well, if you've never listened to the show, I will tell you right now, Brian, Justin, Scott, myself, we don't always agree. In fact, sometimes we downright hate each other because of our opinions. We believe in our opinions and they're so often wrong or just confusing, or we get facts, you know, discombobulate, you know, there's a million different reasons why we debate or argue or, but I will tell you at the end of the day, we always enjoy spending 2 hours with each other for you guys every week. It's a really good time. It's a lot of fun. 90% of the time it's fun. 95% of the arguments are fun arguments. Nobody means any ill will. There is 5% where somebody wants to punch somebody in the face. Usually it's Justin or I, but, you know, Scott gets a little riled up too. Brian, not so much. Unless Brian's been drinking, he kind of just lets it go. He just walks it off. If he gets pissed off, he just leaves. He's like, you know what? I'm done, and storms off. He's totally a diva. Totally a diva. But let's get into something a little happier. All that brotherly love? Yeah, it's there. So we decided we're going to take our time and devote our minds and hearts to a topic that that really resonates with the ladies. That's love. That's right, love. We like love movies quite a bit. So really, they're not really for the ladies anymore. And in this topic, we talk about romance films, etc. And also, is chick flick really still appropriate? Or are we just sexist pigs? It's a good topic, and I will tell you, one of the two most popular episodes of the year. People love love. So without further ado, from episode 129, here's our take on love. Well, in the honor of Valentine's Day, in honor of VD, we're going to talk about the Big L. Some serious, some not so serious, but hopefully all of this is going to be entertaining. So we're going to put away our man card, and we're going to be honest. We're going to put it out there. We're going to let you know what we really feel. We're going to talk about our feelings, whatever those are, or my feeling. That's really all I got is the one. So first up, and this one is just for Scott and Justin. Brian and I don't even get to talk for this segment. We just have to listen to these bitches whine. We're guys. Some of us are sensitive. Others are not so much. I assume that means Brian and I are not that sensitive. So for the sensitive guys, Scott and Justin, right before you guys break into song and stare wistfully in the mirror at yourselves, I want to know right here, right now, what do you like about romantic films when they're done right?
My favorite romantic films usually involve relationships. I don't go for the teeny bopper love story. To me, that's not interesting. When you're a young person, you fall in and out of love at the drop of a hat. I mean, it takes almost nothing to make someone just, oh my God, I'm so in love with this person. You know, and anytime I watch a story where someone young falls in love and it's the most important thing ever, and nothing will ever be the same, it makes me want to gag. Because when you're that young, you have no idea really what love is. You barely know who you are, much less how you feel about someone else. So when it comes to those younger, like The Notebook, anything, if you're 25 or younger, I don't want to see your fucking romantic movie because you know shit. But for those films that tackle people who are, you know, 25, 30, 35 or older, and you see love through the eyes of someone who's lived, who knows themselves, who's lost, and putting themselves back out there again, whether it's Sleepless in Seattle or a slew of other movies, to me, that's what really works. I like seeing people who are damaged putting themselves back out there again and finding love, you know, against some harsh odds. I don't want to see teenagers falling in love. Ugh.
For me, the two things I've got is one that is movies that do not do something, and that is to follow the typical formula of a romantic movie. Guy meets girl, guy woos girl, guy and girl fall in love, guy screws up royally, girl gets mad, guy figures out a way for her to not be mad, credits.
Misunderstandings ensue.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some other weird twist in it, but that's the basic formula, and I like a movie that just strays as far away from that as possible, does something fresh. I also really appreciate movies that feel like they really could happen. These romantic comedies, they just feel like a play more than real life. Just people, actors just in there just kind of just following, reading the script. You almost can feel them reading it off screen sometimes. Something that makes it feel real, like you really buy that these people are really in love, that they're going through real life situations, not something quirky and silly, but something that seems real life. It kind of makes you appreciate what you've got in your own life as well at the same time.
And for me, one of the most successful films at giving you a romantic movie, yet it's like a wolf in sheep's clothing, is Jerry Maguire. From the outside looking in, it looks like a sports movie. You know, it's about a sports agent. It's about football and football players. Yet at the heart of it is this really, really, for me, powerful romantic film. You know, about these two people who are so different and yet these circumstances come together and then their lives just become wrapped up in each other. And the ending of that film, I don't care how many times I see it, when he realizes just what it is he has in her and her the same, his Tom Cruise's speech at the end of that movie kills me. I cry every time. It's a cynical world. And he just, oh, shit. I'm starting to get weepy just thinking about it.
All right. Well, now we're done with you sensitive bitches. Some of us are a little less inclined to want to venture out and see a romantic film. That's Brian and I. So let's answer the age-old question. Why do men like us loathe being drug-kicking, screaming? No, it's drug.
No, you pretty much have to drug us to get us in there.
Exactly.
Slip me a roofie.
All right. Why we got to be dragged into the theater to watch these waterworks, Brian?
I mean, it's simple. Why do we go to movies? To escape, to dream, and men and women dream differently. Men love heroic shit. We do. We like, you know, we that every, I don't care if it's a Western, if it's sci-fi, war, whatever. It's the same basic plot. A little meek nobody overcomes improbable odds to save a city, a world, a universe, whatever the case is. And we want to feel like if I walk out of this theater and the shit hits the fan, I can save this world, including my date.
Mm-hmm. Single-handed.
So, you know, I mean, in romantic movies, you got the lovable chucklehead, you know, insert Hugh Grant or Tom Hanks, whoever. And, you know, he's basically fixed in an hour and a half by a woman. So he makes mistakes. She corrects him. He's sorry. Movie ends with him happy. They're good guys. And, you know, they've probably learned some great lesson in everything. They've changed their ways, you know, whatever the, you know, the hurdle is, but they're not heroic. So we don't really latch on to them. Mm-hmm. But that's, I don't know. Maybe I'm.
No, that's just it. I actually like the movies. Like Scott said, when they're original, I really can't stand them when they're formulaic like that, when it's the same concept and you get the monologue, the obligatory monologue. I really hate the monologue. As soon as they start doing that, very rarely does that ever work for me. I mean, I'm just sitting there going, really? Who would ever have this conversation, no matter how bad the relationship was? And if you just wrong this woman that horribly, what woman's going to stand there for 10 minutes and listen to it?
Yep.
They're going to smack you in the face, go away with your best friend, and never call you again. That's what's going to happen. My thing is, I actually like the movies, but I don't want to pay for them. I don't want to go to a theater and go through the expense of sitting through another movie that I know is going to be pretty much the same, unless I read some reviews that say this movie's different. Like About Time, I want to see that one. I wish I would have saw that in the theater just because it sounded like it was a different one. You know, I just don't want to see the same movie, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 45 Days, Part 2. You know, I just don't want to see that anymore. If I'm going to a theater and pay for something, I want to see something either that demands to be seen on the big screen because of the special effects or because of, you know, it's just something that you have to see on the big screen. And it's not going to just be the same old, same old. Now, I'm not saying that action movies aren't the same old, same old. I get that. But the spectacle plays better in a theater than a romantic movie plays better at home, to me, personally. That's my take on it. Now, this question has nothing to do with PCBS. So just for you as a film goer, and be as honest as you can be, do you guys think that in this day and age, it's still okay to call movies chick flicks? If they're about a couple or relationship, is it okay to say chick flicks?
It doesn't bother me, but that kind of stuff really does. I think that women should be more bothered by the term chick being referred to as the male gender than the movies themselves being known as chick flicks. Like, I mean, it almost makes it sound, it's almost like a derogatory term. You say, you know, oh, look at those chicks over there or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, it's very, I don't know, I feel very Happy Days or some that kind of, that era.
It's a little old.
It's a very old word.
It's dated, so to speak.
I think it's just more that, because it rhymes. Chick flick rhymes. I don't know. I don't use the term very often. When I do, it's usually in the phrase chick flick. And it has nothing to do with gender for me. It just has to do with that kind of movie.
For you, that means romance movie.
Right. It just means romance movie. It doesn't mean girly movie. It just means romantic movie.
Yeah, I'm not a, you know, I don't like the term chick flick, but only because when people hear it, they think of a certain type of movie. And usually the type of movie they're thinking of is a, you know, an average piece of crap romantic movie that's just not really worth your time, but it's purely for some simple-minded demographic. The term, though, chick flick, I don't think is all that bad. I mean, my wife uses it. She loves to read what she calls chick lit. Again, you get that kind of rhyming thing going. So, you know, as long as women call each other chicks and don't seem to mind it, then I'm certainly not going to mind it. I just wish the term didn't have such a bad stigma attached to it. There are good movies out there that would be considered chick flicks. They just get put under that crappy umbrella.
I mean, I kind of disagree with that a little bit. I think the term chick flick just kind of refers to something that's just basically more marketed to towards women. You know, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a cookie cutter teeny bopper love story with, you know, ugly teenage girl is transformed into beauty queen who finally wins the apple of her eye later in the movie or something. I mean, I just kind of think it's you're talking with your guys, whatever, like, hey, have you seen the preview for that? Yeah, it's a chick flick. The girl, you know, my wife wants to go see it, whatever the case is. I don't think it necessarily, I think it can cover a lot of, a lot of it, you know, whether it's a rom-com, whether it's just maybe a more romantic movie.
I would say, though, that whenever I've heard a male say chick flick, more often than not, it's said in a derogatory.
There may be an eye roll in there.
They say it as that chick flick. It's not meant to be something positive or even neutral. It's It's definitely a negative. When women say it now, I don't get that. But I think guys, when they use it, it's definitely not a good thing.
I hate the term. Always have. I just think it's chauvinistic. And I realize it's not. I realize, every guy I know says it. So, I mean, it's not like I don't understand where they're coming from. It's just something they grew up with and you're used to it. But I've got a daughter, and she loves action flicks and romantic flicks. So I really don't appreciate, me personally, I don't use that because, my daughter's not, it's not just a chick flick. It's just a flick. It's just a movie, So I just never understood the connotation. I always thought it was kind of chauvinistic. But that's probably just because I'm overprotective and I don't like people calling her a chick.
From a psychological perspective, though, when these kinds of movies are made, do you don't think they're made for a particular target audience in mind? Well, or you think they're just making it for everybody?
No, absolutely. I mean, they're marketing toward a specific audience. I just think, like you said, chick flick is derogatory, or it's perceived as negative because it's, now I don't want to see it because it's a chick flick. It's just like kind of, and I hate to say it, but sometimes I don't want to see that. It's a black movie. Or I don't want to see that. That's a freaking uppity white movie. It's a connotation.
how many movies have you avoided because they're an uppity white movie?
I'm sure that there's one or two. There's got to be.
With Titanic?
Yeah, no, I love Titanic. Shh, don't you get me started.
There's a lot of uppity whites on that one.
There sure are, and they all drown. All right, guys. Now, that is these. Well, they did.
Spoiler alert.
All right, let's pick some couples. Now, there's, we've seen, I don't know how many of these pairings of people. Some of them work, some of them don't. So you can only pick one, but you can pick one couple from both film and TV, Justin. So if you have an honorable mention, you won't hear it in the podcast, I promise you, so don't even bother.
So, no honorable mentions.
No honorable mentions. Pick one, movie and TV. So you get to pick two just from each medium.
I got it.
All right.
Can you shut
with
up now?
You, we have to clarify, sir. We have to clarify. Who is your all-time favorite couple, Justin?
And repeat. One movie, one TV.
There you go.
All right. Well, here's my first of the movie choices. This should come as no surprise to anybody who listens to this show. It's Harry and Sally. When Harry Met Sally is one of my top three romantic comedies of all time. I love it. Those two kill me. When I was going through a very, kind of bleak romantic period in my life, I call it the 20s. That film got me through it. I would watch it once or twice a month whenever I was feeling low. And by the end of it, I believed in love again. I knew it would come my way, and I felt better. So when it comes to cinematic couples, Harry and Sally have to be my favorite. As far as television goes, I got to give it to Buffy and Spike. Buffy went through a lot of dudes.
Buffy and Spike, not Buffy and Angel, huh?
Fuck no. All Buffy right. and Spike. And I'll tell you why.
Just tell me succinctly.
Spike loved her even when he didn't have a soul. And then he went about earning his own soul. He didn't get it given back to him via some gypsy curse or something else. He went and he got it. And their relationship, of course, she's a vampire slayer. He's a vampire. It's the whole Romeo and Juliet kind of thing. They shouldn't love each other. And for a lot of the show, they don't. But towards the last few seasons, they come to see in each other things they didn't see before, didn't want to see. And for me, that kind of pairing where they actually change over the course of their relationship is something that I really enjoyed. Most romantic relationships on television don't change either side all that much. Spike, in my, really for me, is one of the most character developed or developed characters on that show, and it's directly because of his relationship with Buffy.
Okay, Brian?
I would go with, I wanted to go with somebody else, but I have to go with pretty much the couple from the greatest movie ever made, and that's Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman.
Ooh.
In Casablanca.
Nice choice.
Just, it's, they're obvious. I mean, his, he's never stopped loving her. He had a small little thing with her for a while until she found out her husband that she thought was dead was alive. And then, you know, she left him, you know, at the train station. He's always carried a flame for her. She randomly walks into his bar, you know, their little flame reignites, and he's really torn with this decision about, you know, I love her, now do it, am I selfish and keep her to myself and she's pretty much doomed to die, or do I, you know, love her and let her go? So, anyway, one of the greatest couples ever. As far as TV, George and Wheezy from the Jeffersons.
Nice. I like it.
I mean, how can you not? I mean, you know, he's just like this, you know, this rooster, you know, he struts around and he talks a big game and everything. And Wheezy just, you know, keeps him in check, and she lets him, you know, she gives him a little bit of, you know, room on that leash to run, but you know, he gets a little out of line and she snatches him back in into place. So, loved the Jeffersons. Anyway, I loved him too. I thought it's just a great dynamic and just a fantastic couple.
For movies, for me, Harry and Sally, and Justin already spoke to that, so I don't need to add to it. I just, they've always felt like they were the most real couple of all of them.
And his soliloquy at the end, you have to admit, is good.
It is. It's one of the few monologues I can stand. TV, Maddie and David from Moonlighting. I mean, for me, there's really no choice there. There's nobody that even comes close to their chemistry. Even though they hate each other offset, I mean, it was like passion on TV until they screwed up the whole series. But still, their chemistry was perfect. I love them. Scotty?
For me, TV, Bill and Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show.
Oh, nice. Loving couple.
They really were. They just seemed like what everybody kind of wanted their mom and dad's relationship to be like when they were growing up. And just every episode, and they worked so well off each other. Those two actors, you never believe for a second that they weren't really together. For movies, Carl and Ellie from Up.
Oh, that's nice.
For 3 minutes that you see the two of them together is the most touching love story. You just see like these snippets, and it's just, oh, it gets you so.
You're going to make
so
me good. Cry.
For
nice,
real.
Nice pick.
Don't make me cry.
Nice choice, Scott. Nice choice. Very sweet. So how about the all-time worst couple? What are the worst couples on film and TV?
Anakin Skywalker and Padme. There, I said it.
Good call.
Episode 2 had some of the most awkward, unbelievable moments I've ever seen in a movie that was supposed to be serious.
Horrible acting and relationship status. Yep. TV?
I actually don't have one for TV. Again, I
don't watch enough TV?
No.
Or you just love them all?
No, be perfectly honest, I didn't read the format correctly and didn't...
That's all right. We'll wait. Go ahead. No, just kidding. Brian?
Dang it. I hate to say it, but that was who I had. I just cannot stand Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman really is just emotionally vapid. I mean, she's pretty and she's a decent actress, but in as far as showing emotion and stuff, there was just no chemistry really at all with those two.
She's a good actress with a good director.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Apparently, maybe that's the, we'll fine. We'll blame the director, what have you. But the fact that, I don't know, it was just, I just never bought them to in any movie that they were any of those three that they were together.
The two of them falling in love in episode two just was – it felt gross. Mm-hmm. it was like
– It's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
What about TV?
He's got sand up his ass.
And it gets everywhere. It
gets everywhere.
Yeah, I know. He's all whiny and emo and stuff. And just, yeah. As far as TV goes, I've got to go with a newer show, and that's Ichabod Crane and his wife Katrina from Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, really?
I'm sorry. His whole motivation is to try to get her out of purgatory, and all it is her yelling at him in dreams and stuff, and waking up, and there's no emotion there. They did a little bit to set it up early in the season, but at this point, I probably would have done forgot about her.
I kind of get what you mean, Brian. I really do. So. Justin?
Fuck, make it a hat trick. Anakin and Padme.
Wow.
In order for Vader's creation to really work, you have to believe that Anakin loves her enough to do the things that he does. And Hayden Christensen is by far one of the worst actors I have ever seen. How he got cast in that role, I don't know whose payroll George was given bribes from, how it happened, but it's terrible. Mm-hmm. It never once works. As far as TV, I'm actually surprised Brian didn't pick this. Cersei and Jaime Lannister, they are a fucking awful couple, and they kill people.
Well, you went with just awful people.
No, they're awful people, and they're an awful couple.
All right. They really are.
They pushed a child trying to his death.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a lot of kids out there that...
Their incest baby is sitting on the throne.
But, I mean, you don't think they have chemistry? Because they're brother and sister?
I think that the actors, they have a little bit of chemistry with each other, but it's everything around their relationship, the things they've done to hide it and thwart others, their rise to power. They're terrible people and a terrible couple.
Got it. For film, for me, Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl are knocked up.
Really?
Yeah, the movie's funny, but they have zero chemistry.
I kind of thought they were good.
No, I thought they were an awful couple. The whole time I'm watching it going, really? No.
Of course, that might have been me just projecting, going, I'm him.
Yeah.
I wish I had her.
I think that might be it. And for TV, don't kill me, Justin, but Jack and Kate on Lost. Awful. Awful. I love Sawyer and Kate. Hated Jack and Kate. Not one moment felt real to me. Not one moment in their whole relationship.
I think early on.
Nope. Not one moment. I watched that series all the way through twice, and I love Sawyer and Kate. They could get me every time. Mostly because I
Sawyer
like Sawyer.
Sawyer and Juliet were better.
Sawyer and anybody. Sawyer's just cool. Jack is just so bland, and those two had no chemistry. It's almost like Kate is like, oh, I'm forced to like you, but man, I'd rather be with anybody else on the island.
No, see, I never got that. He's a good-looking guy. He's a surgeon.
Well, that's why it's my pick and not yours. So, well,
once again, you show your pick and sucks.
Now, who is your all-time favorite floozy Jezebel Lothario ho, if you will, from both TV and film? Brian?
From movies, I got to go with probably the queen, Sharon Stone.
Ooh, there you go. The infamous scene.
You know, Basic Instinct.
I like
it. She was even not only Basic Instinct, but Total Recall.
You remember she was floozy and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 90s, she was just a big old slut. Casino. So.
And TV?
Honestly, TV, I don't even have one. I really couldn't think of one
okay.
that really stood out to me. So I have to skip that one. I'll probably steal one of yours in a minute.
That's fine. For film, for me, Julia Roberts and My Best Friend's Wedding. Yeah. I totally would have ran away with her instead of Cameron Diaz. I'm sorry. He made the wrong call. You married the wrong one. And she was, because she totally wanted to steal her man. That's a floozy. And TV, Charisma Carpenter's Cordelia in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, not Angel, because she changed her character there, but in Buffy, she was kind of seen early on as, you know, the temptress, the Jezebel. And she just evolved as a character. I just really loved her.
She was great, though, in Angel.
She was. Her character became a lot cooler and more interesting in Angel, but I loved her in Buffy.
Oh, season three. Oh, goddamn. That's one of the best seasons of television ever.
Scotty?
I don't have one for TV, but for film, I took a different spin with and took the temptress route a little bit. I picked Elizabeth Hurley as the devil in Bedazzled.
Oh,
God.
I've never been a huge fan of hers as far as like on the hot scale, but she looked really good in that movie.
Oh, God. Have you not seen Austin Powers?
Scott's like, I'll sign the contract.
I like that movie anyway, but just her whole like seducing him into doing all this kind of stuff. It was, yeah, I'm there.
Justin?
You know, I went a little more literal with this, with the favorite hoe. And my pick covers both television and movies.
Okay.
Inara.
Ooh.
From Firefly and Serenity. She actually plays a prostitute of sorts. Of course, they call it a companion, but, you know, and call a spade, she a hoe. But she a great hoe.
She's a classy hoe. She's a
classy hoe, beautiful hoe, and she ain't cheap neither.
Mm-mm.
But I liked actually having a pick that covered both.
Oh, well, aren't you special?
Beat you.
He's very proud of himself.
Yeah, he is.
I am. I'm patting myself on the back.
So what is the one romantic film that others rave about and you can't stand, Scotty?
Pretty Woman.
Oh, fucker.
Really?
Talk for us both, because that was my choice.
I don't know. I have this hard time with the whole feel sorry for the hooker movies. I'm sorry.
You have a hard time pitying the hooker?
I do.
She's
I'm
the
sorry.
Hooker with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
That's
a heart
fine.
Of gold between her legs.
I don't know. I've never been a big fan of that one, and that's like everybody's go-to.
I just love when he gets in Jason Alexander's face about basically calling her a hooker. I'm like, what are you getting mad about? She's a hooker.
All right.
How do you get mad about that? How do you cast out your buddy because he's being a douche to a hooker?
Right.
Touché. Well, like Justin said, you spoke for him. What about you, Brian?
This is, I don't know, maybe moral reasons or something, which is not exactly my strongest suit, but... Bridges of Madison County.
Oh.
Now, this is a movie that's, you know, recognized as just a wonderful love story, and it's just loved. I mean, Meryl Streep was awesome. Clint Eastwood was great, blah, 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 great. You know, I think he directed it also.
Mm-hmm.
It's just lovely. I think it won Oscars, if I'm not mistaken. But it's about a woman who has an affair, cheats on her husband. Mm-hmm. Husband and kids are out for about 3 or 4 days. It's not like the guy's an asshole. It's not like he beating her or, you know, nothing like that.
She's just a hoe.
She's just a hoe. I mean, dude comes in with a camera. Hey, how you doing? You got some bridges around here? Yeah. You want to run out back and
do it on one of them?
Plow some corn? Sure.
You want to have the sex?
And it's, you know, but her infidelity is romanticized because she's banging Clint Eastwood, you know? I mean, I don't want to hear any more shit about double standards.
Touche, sir. Touche. Mine's Groundhog Day. Yep. Yep. Not funny. Not sweet.
My God.
Just dumb. Just fucking dumb.
Fuck.
High just five. Dumb. High five right here.
Internet high five. Just dumb. I just don't understand it. And basically, it's like you're making me suffer over and over and over. You can't even end the damn movie because I keep reliving the same shitty day.
Oh,
no.
I'm just gonna keep doing the nuts.
Sorry.
I'm kind of...
That's so hard. It is so good.
No, it's not. It's really not.
I'm heartbroken right now.
All right, sissies. Fess up. There can only be one. What is your favorite movie love song? Brian, come on. You know you got one.
Oh, God.
Come on, sugar.
Okay, it's actually, I'll give you a clue.
Don't give me a clue, just tell me the fucking song. We ain't got time for clues, son.
All for Love by Bryan Adams, Sting, and Rod Stewart from Three Musketeers.
Aww.
Huh.
Very nice. Not Everything I Do, you did the All for
Love.
I
know, I was about to say Everything I Do.
That was like 1A.
All right.
Or 1B actually.
No, but that's a good song. Oh.
I don't know. It's sweet. It's lovely. And the way that they all kind of rotate the lead in that, you know, and just it, I like it.
Fair enough. Scotty?
Mine is from a movie that I've been raving about a lot lately, which is About Time. And there's a song by the artist is Ben Folds. He's kind of a piano player, very popular. He's on The Voice now. Mm-hmm. The song is called The Luckiest. It's a super touching. It's just him and the piano. And I've got a personal attachment to that song because I've liked the song well before I saw the movie. It was actually my wedding video, so I had some of that going on when I saw this movie. It works so well in this movie that, it was hard to – I was fighting in the theater, mm-hmm. fighting back. It just works. So,
Justin, who swears he has the best movie love song, by the way?
Of course I do. Falling Slowly from Once.
Oh, that's a really good one.
The scene in the movie where they play this song is so touching because it's just two people trying to connect. They're in a music store. He sits at a piano and he gets a guitar and starts playing just a song that he's kind of been thinking of. The next thing you know, she sits on a piano. She starts playing it with him. He's singing. He's got that fantastic voice, and the two of them just play it. And I can't hear that song without just getting a little choked up about the love that it talks about and falling slowly together. It is, for me, probably the best real true love song that I've ever heard in a movie. And it helps that those two actually had a relationship together and that it's not just a song made for marketing purposes, but it's actually a song those two wrote. So there's that added little bit of emotion and history to it. It's fantastic.
Good call.
Mine is from City of Angels. And
Iris.
Iris the Goo Goo. Hey, can you shut up? It's my pick. Shh. Stop talking. It's Iris from the Goo Goo Dolls, as Justin just told you before I even got a chance to. It's like it was stolen from me. But yeah,
I love that song.
It has a lot of personal meaning, which I'm not going to go to on the internet. But that, as well as I can hear that song. And I actually debated, this one quite a bit earlier. And it's a song, if I put it in, I will weep. I won't admit it, but I will weep.
I had it on my list, and it was going to be my pick. And then as I was going through my collection of music, I just saw Falling Slowly, and I was like, that's the one. But Iris is so good.
Yeah, it's better than what you picked. Last question.
Okay. It's a close second.
You're sitting at home. Your woman or man, in Scott's case, just left you. You're a wreck. You're crying. You're in your tub with peanut butter, box of Kleenex, nothing but time. What is the go-to movie? What is your favorite romantic movie to remind you just how good love can be?
Brokeback Mountain. I'm just kidding.
Justin, it's your pick.
Well, it's a valid pick. No, for me, it's Joe versus the Volcano. I mean, it starts off with Tom Hanks' character, just this abysmal loser, and it follows him through this sort of fairy tale story to finding true love. It's whimsical. It's so funny. Very, very touching. And it has some of the best quotable lines that any movie could have. Harry Met Sally's great, but Joe versus the Volcano, that's what I'm going to go to first.
All right, Brian?
I got to go with The Princess Bride.
Ooh, nice pick.
True love, wins out. You got to perfect mix of comedy, a little bit of action. It wasn't even ruined by the poor movie sets, backgrounds and stuff.
True.
He clearly said to blave.
To blave.
Mine is Titanic. Titanic is my...
Golly, 12 hours of just misery, just feeling
I love it. If I want to get all mopey and spend copious amounts of time thinking about the one that got away, Jack and Rose do it every time. Sorry. I have no shame in that. People are like,
well, he got away because she let him go.
That's true, because she killed him. What about you, Scott?
Well, I had Princess Bride on my list originally, and I changed it to one that I know that Brian hates, which is The Notebook. It's a go-to. I know it's an easy choice, but
it's like manufactured to make tears.
It really is. It's one of the – I talked about movies where the love story feels real. Mm-hmm. And those two just really make – you kind of see the progression, and they go through ups and downs and a real big down. It's there's very few movies that really can make me just sob uncontrollably by the end of it. And I have to – even watching it multiple times now, I really have to fight back. It is so touching.
I do love the ending to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say Drive. I'm like, that's a romantic movie?
Remember Gosling and Drive?
I don't know about you guys, but I love that bit. Now we're going to the final topic. This is the last one. Hope you guys have been entertained. Justin, Brian, Scott, and myself, we had a great time with this last topic. This is the monologue episode. If you've never heard it, it's interesting because we all do the absolute worst impression of our favorite monologues I think that's possible. I'm not going to tell you who does what, but we each do our favorite monologues and varying results. Scott actually you might want to turn your radio down just a hair because he gets very loud. He's very angry when he's doing his. It's a really fun bit, and it's our most popular episode of the year. It was the most downloaded episode of the entire year, not just that first quarter that I was looking at, the entire year. So people like monologues. So here you go. Without further ado, here's the hose on monologue. All right, movie monologues are those random movie speeches. You guys know what I'm talking about. You watch a movie, and then for some random reason, somebody either has to explain the entire plot of a movie, or they have to rile the troops up, or they have to tell the girl they love them. Whatever it is, movie monologues, that's what we're talking about. When these monologues work, what makes them work for you, Justin?
Usually it's the honesty of their emotions. If I feel like the actor, and through them the character, really feels what they're saying, then I'm much more likely to get behind them and be moved by what they're saying. Not a lot of actors can pull off a really good monologue. But when they, when in their eyes and in their expressions, they've got it working, then yeah, I'll be right there with you. And it, the language cannot be cheesy. The instant something gets a little cheesy, I have to back away from it. And I know everybody loves the Independence Day little speech at the end. I don't, because Bill Pullman for me isn't a good enough actor to pull off a monologue. And I think the dialogue, the words he was given were just a little bit cheesy. I didn't like it, but a lot of people love it. So I recognize that I am in the vast minority.
We're going to be gone, or we're going to go on, or whatever the fuck it is. We're going to be strong. Today is our Independence Day. That was the speech. That's kind of how he sounded. He's right. The acting wasn't that great. It's That's memorable because, but you really don't like Independence Day though, right?
I love Independence Day.
Oh, do you?
Day.
Okay.
I just didn't like that little speech. For me, the epitome of those kinds of speeches is the St. Crispin's Day speech near the end of Hamlet. Henry V.
Yep.
That Band of Brothers speech is so good that any time someone else tries to even approach it, they usually fail. I think Braveheart is one of the few movies that doesn't just kind of fall all over itself in mimicking that. It did it quite well. But Bill Pullman, you are no Henry V.
Let's continue with that for a second, because I want to know, is there a point where a good monologue starts to go bad? You know what I mean? Can you think of an example where it's a really good monologue and then all of a sudden it just, why did they keep going, or that went just a hair too long? You know what I'm saying?
I think the length is one in particular. I mean, some just kind of focus on, we're going to have a nice long discussion here, but it's not even a discussion because it's a monologue. Mm-hmm. One guy talking in a movie by himself for a long period of time becomes more of a distraction at some point. Because you're suddenly realizing nobody else has talked for a really long time.
And they're all just sitting there in awe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yay, go him. Well, when you guys hear these monologues, and as soon as they start, you almost immediately tune them out.
The villain explanations, I think, is probably the worst thing. Usually, of course, at the end of the movie, it's, here's why I did what I did and all that kind of stuff. It's just, usually at that point, I mean, it's not that I don't care, but I don't know. I want something else. It's almost cliche when you got, the villain who's explaining why he's kidnapped James Bond and got him tied up above some laser sharks or whatever. So it's just kind of, it's just like, okay, all right. So you're just, it's like it, at this stage, at, you know, this stage in cinema and everything, I understand it worked 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Nowadays, I need something a little bit different.
Don't you get irritated when they try to make that work, even though they try to make it new or different, but it's the same crap every time?
Yeah, it's just the same thing. You know, you killed my dad when I was a kid, and I've never forgot it, and I've spent my life trying to get back at you. You understand that, you know, it's a slippery slope to walk, but because you've got to have that mystery throughout the movie. But at the same token, it just, you, when you cram it all into a 30-second speech or a 1-minute speech, then it just seems cliche.
It's irritating. I find it irritating because, you know, you watch these movies, and especially films that are, you're really invested in the realism of them. Like, there's a lot of them that are real realistic now. I said real realistic, like an idiot. But you get invested in the movie. You're in with the character, you're in with the story, whatever it is. And then you get to the end, and for some reason, the villain has captured the hero when they've been killing everybody else. So, but for whatever reason, they got to capture them. And then they actually take the time because, oh, well, you're tied up. You can't catch me, even though I didn't see you slip that razor blade in your boot. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you the entire reason why I've done everything, even though I didn't tell everybody else I killed. But I'm going to tell you because you're special before I kill you again. Those kind of things just feel like you're slapping me in the face when you do them, mm-hmm. those monologues. You know what I mean? So I get what you're saying, Brian. What about you, Scott?
I think that the ones that bug me the most are the cheesy ones that cue in some kind of music that you instantly go, oh, I'm supposed to crank up the emotion here now. You know what I mean?
Start swelling.
Yeah. I just if you have to cue in music to get me to feel emotion, the words aren't enough. Mm-hmm. I've kind of tuned out at some point. I think you don't see that as much in current movies. I think it was more of like a late 80s, early 90s kind of thing. But yeah, it just bugs me. Like, okay. Like, give an example. This isn't a movie, but like a sitcom TV show, Full House. Every episode had that, like, when they had to sit down and have a serious conversation.
The learning moment.
The learning moment, yeah, where like the violins just kind of come in, like, and like, oh, okay. It's getting serious now. No more comedy.
Yay.
But when they do that in a movie, it's just, I'm done.
That's a really great way to put it. It's when the music swells, when the sun is setting behind them. If they have to add something other than the actor and the words, then to me that's a sure sign that they don't have enough faith that what they're saying alone will move you. Let's now do everything else that we possibly can to affect you. God damn it. I'll start instantly tuning out.
Do you guys like movie monologues?
I mean, yes. Overall, if it's done well, I love them.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If it's, you know, in the right context, you know, lawyer dramas tend to have some of the best ones because you've got an attorney who's there who has to give the final argument. So it's prime time to do a monologue, you know?
That's
so
true. Yeah.
If it, you know, but if it fits the situation, of course, you know, the inspirational speeches before you go into battle, I mean, that's kind of a prime time too. But like Justin said, if it's done right, man, it'll put, you know, it'll make the hairs on your neck stand up.
The ones that I tune out as soon as it starts happening is romantic films. And I talked about that last week in the love episode. Love is as soon as the guy breaks the girl's heart, does something stupid like all of us guys do. And then at the end, finally he corners her, very close to stalking laws apply here, and basically gives her a 10-minute monologue explaining all the things he's learned throughout the course of these, hour and a half that he's been learning these things. And the girl stands there and listens to the entire thing, you know, just weeping. Oh my God, it's okay that you slept with my best friend or my sister because you've learned and you've grown.
It's
generally, yeah, it's bad because I can't picture anyone ever sitting there. And I've actually, and we've all done this, and if you say you haven't done this, you're a lying fucker, is we've all had those moments at some point in our life where we thought, this is the moment where I get to give one of those movie monologues. And you start talking for just a little, and it doesn't even get to, you have it all planned out in your head exactly how you're going to say it, whether you're going to the girl that you want, you always wanted to talk to, and you're finally going to tell her how you feel, or you're mad at the bully, so you're finally going to tell him exactly what you think, and you're going to tell him this whole thing. It never goes down the way you plan it, mm-hmm. ever. You never get that movie closure.
You like tell her to shut up. Just shut up. Quit asking me questions. Yes. I'm only 25% done with this. Let me.
Because in the movie, they just go, let me finish.
Yeah, yeah, very quiet.
And that doesn't work.
Yeah, because in the real world, you're getting that shit slapped out of you. And if you're if you happen to be a hero, if that scenario happens to you, where you thankfully have the fate of your small town in your hands, and you find the serial killer or whatever it is, he's not going to give you time to sit there and either A, talk him out of whatever he's doing, or B, have enough time to escape, or C, have enough time to kill him. Because he's a serial killer. He's better at this than you. Always. Very rarely, with rare exception, is the serial killer not as good as, or not better than the hero in the real world. So those always, I always have a hard time with those. All right, guys. So what's worse? Exposition monologuing, where the guy is basically telling, for some reason, he has to tell exactly what the plot of the movie is. And it takes him a good 5 minutes of just talking. Or the romantic monologuing, like I was just talking about.
I say romantic monologuing just because simply it's rarely original. You don't see a whole lot of originality when it comes to the romantic monologuing. It's usually been there, done that kind of thing. The exposition monologue, you at least have some room for something clever. Something
yeah,
new
a different
could,
way.
Could be brought in, something that could make it – there's a chance it could be interesting. You know, I'm
an outside chance.
An outside chance. I feel like I will not see a romantic comedy where I'm going to be touched by a romantic monologue anymore after stuff like, I don't want to give anybody's away that they might be using, but you know, there's a lot of romantic movies that I've watched that, wow, that one got me. That little speech or that non-speech, mm-hmm. you know, really worked. So, what do you guys think?
I like romantic monologues. I'm a sap. And when they're done really, really well, it just reduces me to a puddle of goo.
So for you, exposition monologuing is the worst one?
Exposition in almost any form bothers me. So, you know, whether it's a monologue or, you know, 2 or 3 pages of text in a book, exposition needs to be handled much better than just one long wall of noise.
I'm exactly with Justin on this one. As much as I hate romantic monologues, and the blah, 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 I love you, it's the exposition ones. Because if you can't find a better way to tell your story than, you know, an unbroken 5 minutes of completely explaining whatever stupid plot you've come up with, don't make that movie. Because for whatever reason, your writer sucks and you should rethink it. I've never understood that. To tell a story that way seems pedestrian,
lazy
to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to go with the romantic stuff. For basically the, it's almost like you stole my notes. Apparently I typed them onto Google Docs. So it literally it's all those same reasons. I just, the whole standing in the rain, you know, at the bus station or front porch step, whatever. And that magical speech woos her and she forgets whatever horrible transgressions you've made against her. It just, it doesn't work that way.
Mm-mm. But well, fuck, we're talking about movies, though. They don't have to work exactly the way real life is.
Yeah, but that's different. When there's a spaceship flying around and there's a talking tree, I know that's bullshit. But whenever a woman sees that, she might get it in her head that that's how it should
Yeah, Justin,
be.
I don't know if you heard, but women don't know that it's fake. Yeah, I just said that. They think it's real. That's what my wife keeps telling me. Why can't it be like the movie? Fuck, I don't have 10 minutes to talk to you. I'm busy.
Because you didn't marry Bradley Cooper.
Exactly. And I didn't marry Jennifer Lawrence, obviously. Just saying. Okay, guys. So we're going to talk about our favorite monologues in a minute. But first, pick the 2 worst movie monologues in history. And that's saying a lot because almost every movie has a monologue, it feels like. So, of all the movies you've seen, what are the 2 worst movie monologues you can remember? Justin, you can go first.
Well, I already mentioned my first one. It's our Independence Day. It's just
you hate it that much, really?
Like I told you, I love a good inspirational. Let's get the soldiers together. Let's rally the troops. Let me give you a speech that will drive you forward into danger. And for me, that speech is just laughable from beginning to end. If I was there when he said it, I would be hard pressed to not boo. Yeah, and then probably
get shot. When I saw that movie as a kid, that speech used to give me like
it still gets me.
Yeah,
but you were a kid. I mean,
no, it still gets me. It still does.
It's crap.
Yeah, it still works.
But the one monologue that I really wanted to work. And it didn't. And it's really the only part of this film that didn't work for me is Morpheus's monologue near the beginning of Matrix Reloaded.
Oh, that's one of mine.
I mean, I think that his overpronunciation of certain words and his trying to boom some things out there undermined what it was he was trying to say. It's one of those moments where the theatrics of the speech really undercut its emotional resonance. And because of that, it ultimately failed for me. But I did like the rest of that rave scene. I think people really misunderstand that scene, but I don't like his monologue.
Machines!
100 years!
What about you, Brian? What are your two worst?
Both of mine come from kind of period pieces, so to speak. First one is Alexander with Colin Farrell.
Oh, God.
He gives this speech, and I didn't realize it was this long, probably because I got my car washed, picked up a pizza, drove home, and he's still talking. But this Braveheart type moment was, I think it's almost 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long monologue. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and he just goes on and on and on, and it's horrible. I mean, look it up. It's on YouTube. It's yeah, I mean, I know that's like, here, this stinks, smell it, but.
But we always do.
It's horrible. Go look it up. The other one is probably the most uninspirational speech ever given, and that's Keira Knightley from Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Oh, yes. Good call. God, I hated that freaking thing.
It's, she even kind of builds up, and then she just says that at the end of it, she whispers, gentlemen, hoist the colors. And they start whispering among themselves. It's just ridiculous. And she's talking about freedom and free man and all this crap. And it's just, just one more reason to hate that movie.
I'm with you, man.
So that's my.
I love the movie, but I do hate that speech.
Scotty,
I had the hardest time coming up with specific examples of bad monologues.
You've only seen 8 movies.
I know. I mean, the odds of finding a really bad one. So, I mean, I could think of general ones, general ideas. We talk about the romantic ones and the ones that they kind of tell the whole story, that kind of thing. But so I had the hardest time. But I did come up with some that aren't as bad. In the sense that you guys are talking, like it just was bad, but just the way it ended was. And the first one was actually kind of funny, which is Samuel Jackson's monologue in Deep Blue Sea.
That ending is totally worth that bad monologue.
I know, right? That's because first we're gonna seal off this pool. Rah! Just because for a split second he had you.
Yeah,
we're gonna stop fighting. We're gonna work this shit out.
God damn, yeah, we're gonna do it.
And then my other one was actually one that I just thought was so stupid, but it still makes me laugh once in a while. I don't even know if you would consider this a monologue, but in one of the Austin Powers movies, bear with me, Dr. Evil gets up in front and tells his life story of how he came to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how he was raised by a guy that thought he invented, he invented the question mark, and then they ritually shave my testicles, and he just goes through this whole thing, and it's just this ridiculous ramblings of Mike Myers that I swear he just made up half of it on the spot.
Oh, I'm sure he did, yeah.
But I don't know why I find it funny, but it's so bad. It really is. It's just like if someone had done that in real life, it would just be terrible.
It would be.
What about you, Aaron?
My first one is the Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter speech. I don't know if you remember that. I'm going to get on my boat and go up Reaver and kick Bison.
Did you say Reaver?
He said Reaver and kick Bison's ass and da-da-da. Oh, God. Jean-Claude Van Damme. I actually love the guy. I think he's a great action guy when he doesn't talk very often. He's got great facial emotion. I've said that before. But, man, he cannot do a powerful
speech.
Did
you know he didn't play Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat because he was going to play in Street Fighter?
I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad
thing. That was a bad thing. That was a bad thing. Johnny Cage would have been more up his alley.
Yes.
Because, man, was that speech bad. And that's a bad movie. So to overcome that is saying something. I mean, he topped a already bad movie with an awful speech. Just awful. And number two is the one that Justin was talking about, that awful, awful rave thing in The Matrix Reloaded. It's just, I mean, when he's addressing all the cave people and he's out there in his little DJ jacket or whatever and trying to look all cool. I already didn't like the movie, and I'm not bashing on it. I know Justin loves the movie, but it's just, I think that was probably the mood setting that made me not be able to get back into it.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
That's interesting.
Because it was that bad to me.
And that's interesting because you usually think of monologues as being towards the end of a film.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically opened up the film. So kind of was the end of the first one almost. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Hmm. Okay, guys. Now we're going to pick our favorite monologues. And we'll have some of our listener picks here in a bit. But we're going to try to have a little fun with it. So what we're going to do is we're going to go round robin, 3-1, 3-2-1. And each person is going to start either reading or acting their monologue, whichever they prefer. No requirements here, just to try to have a little fun with it. And they have to stop with the first two as soon as we get it right. So if we guess what the monologue is from, what the movie's from, they have to shut the hell up and just tell us why they love it. But we'll see. We might be stumped. You never know. But we'll start with you, Brian. Number three, what is your third favorite monologue?
All right. I don't know who you are.
Taken.
I don't know what you want. Scott, what'd you say?
Taken.
Yeah.
Wow, you didn't even get like 8 words out.
I knew that was good. That was why it was. I love that. You know, I love that speech. And it's just, that was like just the iconic scene of that movie. And the fact that I remember he was on a talk show one time where an audience member, he actually left that on her phone as her, you know, as her voicemail. Yeah. So, I just love that speech. And it is very, I knew it was going to be gotten pretty quick. That was real good, Scott. But
he
couldn't let me have my moment.
Yeah. Apparently. What about you, Scott? Your turn.
Voila. In view, a humble vaudevillian veteran.
V for Vendetta.
Yes.
Nice.
I absolutely adore that scene in that movie.
I know it just because of Voila.
Exactly.
It's the only time I've ever heard Voila in a movie.
It's kind of a givvy. But he uses, I pretty much used every word in the dictionary under the letter V, I think, in that sentence. And the range of emotion that dude, Hugo Weaving, pulls off in that scene without ever seeing his face, the whole movie, really. But
yeah, he was very impressive in that.
It is just so, so awesome. I love, he's using nothing but body language. There's no facial expressions. You don't see his face through the whole movie. And I just absolutely loved it. I've actually gone through and pulled up that and picked it apart to see what he's saying. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you don't really pick it up when you read it. At least I didn't. I'm not smart enough like Justin. So.
Oh, wow.
We know.
Jesus, get off his lap. All right. My number three. Ready? I have an MD from Harvard. I am board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery. I have been awarded citations from 7 different medical boards in New England, and I am never, ever sick at sea. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or that their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or that their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from post-operative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now, you go ahead and you read your Bible, Dennis.
Oh, God.
And you go to your church. Oh. And with any luck, you might win the annual raffle. But if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex, let me tell you something. I am God.
Oh, Michael Douglas, right?
Nope. That's Alec Baldwin from Malice.
Ah, shit. Damn it.
Fucking love that speech. Love it. If you haven't seen that movie, go watch it, because he is an evil motherfucker in there.
I haven't seen it. I got to look that one up.
Oof. Justin, number 3.
All right, hold on. lion face.
All right. Acting 101 from Justin McCumber.
Here we go. Oh, fuck you. Fuck you, pal. Jesus, there you go. Trying to pass the buck. I'm the source of all your misery. Who closed the store to play hockey? Who closed
Clerks.
The store to go to a wake? Yes.
Nice.
It's just after a whole movie of Dante's, I'm not supposed to be here, and his whining and his bitching. Finally, his best friend sits him down and gives him the straight bullshit. And it's just a really great speech for a great character to finally tell this guy, shut the fuck up.
I like it. Good. Nice job. And you sounded kind of whiny like he did.
I was trying to.
Brian, number two, what is your second favorite?
All right. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. All right. A Japanese submarine slammed two torpedoes into our side, Chief. We was coming back from the island of Tinian too late.
I know it, but
just
I kind of
delivered
want to
the bomb, the Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes.
Nobody knows this yet? Keep going.
Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. A tiger, 13-footer. You know how you know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail.
Nope.
What we didn't know was our bomb mission had been so secret, no distress signal had been sent. They didn't even list us overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups.
This is so easy.
Know, it was kind of like old squares in the battle like that you see in the calendar named the Battle of Waterloo. And the idea was the shark comes to the nearest man and he starts pounding and hollering and screaming.
Lifeless eyes.
Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes.
Like a doll's eyes. Yes!
Thank God.
It's about time. Sorry, I knew
it. How many times have I got to say shark?
I knew it 3 seconds into that thing, but I'm like, oh, I'll let him go, because I felt bad last time you didn't get to talk. Excellent.
I'm just not that familiar enough with Jaws.
Yeah. Oh, that Indianapolis speech is fantastic.
It is fantastic. And I think what I love about the speech is, of course, he says it, you know, it's a much slower pace. He's got that Scottish accent or whatever it is, wherever it is he's from, and he's, you know, and it's just eerie, you know, and there's no music. You just hear the creaking of the boat, and it's right after they got finished singing that crazy song, mm-hmm. and, you know, and he just starts telling that story, and it just, once he starts, it just, you know, it's almost like it just instantly gets quiet, and then when he starts telling that story about the Indianapolis, it's just, it's so eerie. Mm-hmm. It's almost as scary as anything else that went on in the movie.
I agree. It's one of the most emotional scenes in the movie. Scotty, number two.
I won't make it far in this one, but I'll give it a shot anyway.
We'll give you a few lines.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a little bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole. I see it in your eyes. You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he is expecting to wake up. Ironically, that's not far from the truth.
The Matrix. Let's just put you down now.
You are doing very well. You're very well spoken.
Oh, there's so many parts in that speech that I know you said that in the third movie or in the second movie when he does his monologue, he over enunciates his words too mm-hmm. much, and I think he did that because he did it so well in this particular speech. It wasn't forceful. It just felt very suave.
Yeah,
the way he pulled it off, and I was so intrigued by this movie the first time I saw it anyway, and it just really pulled me in and just made me absolutely love the movie. So.
All right, well, my number two. Ready?
Red leather, yellow leather, lion's face. Ooh.
I can't act this one, so it's sad.
Obviously.
Fuck you.
I don't know this movie either.
Sean Connery.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I could not allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago.
Are you really reading your line, or not? I can't tell.
I'm reading it.
I didn't know you'd started.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I thought you were still doing the Sean Connery.
He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything but just sit and stare like one of his stuffed birds. They know I can't move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet. Just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them.
Let Psycho? Them...
Yes, very good.
There we go.
I'm glad you got it, even with my bogus accent.
I was more distracted by the accent.
Yeah.
You're rough. Welcome.
You're welcome.
Was that actually like Hitchcock's actual accent?
No, that was just because you guys were giving me shit, so I just thought I'd continue. That's all. There's really no reason for it, as most of my accents really have no reason for. But that is one of my all-time favorite movies, and that monologue, you know, especially with the ending of why she wouldn't even harm a fly, just, oh, it gets me every time. I've seen that movie 50 times, and it gets me every time. Hmm. Justin, number two.
If any of y'all get this, I will actually be kind of surprised. You are getting complacent, ungrateful, complete and total job burnout, and don't think I didn't notice. You just didn't give a shit anymore, dragging your feet everywhere, telling everybody you were doing my job, that you were running the show, that without you I was nothing. Yeah, people tell me things. So don't come preaching to me about your ideas of what's fair. You're no martyr here. You're no hero. You're just a fucking hypocrite. You're just like any other punk kid out there looking for a way in, any way in.
Swimming with sharks?
Damn it! Very good.
Nice. Oh, that's the Kevin Spacey movie. I haven't seen that in forever.
That was a little tie-in to House of Cards.
Very nice. That's a good pick, though. That's actually a good movie. People should seek that one out.
Oh, it's awesome.
Oh, it is,
you like Kevin Spacey ranting? Whoo, it doesn't get much better than Swimming with Sharks.
All right, Brian, now this time we're not going to cut them off. We're going to let them finish whatever their monologue is all the way through. So you can act it, read it, whatever makes you feel most comfortable. But Brian, what is your favorite monologue / speech of all time?
All right, here he goes. Well, I believe in the soul, the cock, the pussy, the small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf in the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Bill good Durham, night. Very nice.
Bill Durham, very good. Yay.
Yay.
Scotty?
Mine's pretty obvious, but I'm going to back up a little bit.
Is he going to yell?
You going to yell it?
Kind of have to.
You can't handle it.
No, it's not that, but...
He's laughing at himself.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back and kill our enemies, that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
Nice. Your accent's so much better than Aaron.
You just scared four people off
Scotty
the highway.
Scotty does any Scottish or Irish accents.
What's that?
You just scared four people off the highway. You caused four accidents. Eight people just ripped their freaking audio knob off their stereo.
Yes, please send your medical bills for your busted eardrums to Scotty Clark.
I'm actually surprised that's your favorite. Nothing from Fight Club, huh?
I thought of see, Fight Club is so hard because that whole movie is basically a monologue. Like, it's hard to pick one. I thought about the one on there, but didn't want to go too on the nose.
All right. Well, I guess it's me. My favorite. I was going to try and do it. I do a mean Christian Slater, which is kind of like Jack Nicholson, but not really. So I'll just try to do it myself. But it is cliche, but I really don't care.
You can't handle the truth. Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you could possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. That Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives.
You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words, the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to. That's what I got.
Oh, it's still good.
Justin?
Oh, if you good, man. That is so good.
Oh, yeah. I tried.
One of many monologues in that movie that's very good.
Oh, I love that movie, period. Period.
Well, after you two showboaters, I don't know if I can follow those up with this one. I like plays, the good ones, Shakespeare. I like Titus Andronicus the best. It's sweet. Incidentally, did you know that you're talking to an artist? I sometimes do special things to my victims, things that are creative. Of course, it takes knowledge, pride in your work. For example, a decapitated head can continue to see for up to approximately 20 seconds. So, when I have one that's gawking, I always hold it up so that it can see its body. It's a little extra I throw in for no added charge.
Oh.
I must admit, it makes me chuckle every time. Life is fun. It's a wonderful life, in fact, for some. It's too bad about poor Father Dyer. I killed him, you know. An interesting problem, but finally it worked. First, a bit of the old succinylcholine to permit one to work without, annoying distractions. Then, a 3-foot catheter threaded directly into the inferior vena cava, or superior vena cava. It's a matter of taste, I think, don't you? Then the tube moves through the vein, under the crease of the arm, into the vein that leads directly into the heart. And then you just hold up the legs and you squeeze the blood manually into a tube from the arms and the legs. There's a little shaking and pounding at the end for the dregs. It isn't perfect. There's a little blood left, I'm afraid. But regardless, the overall effect is astonishing. And isn't that really what counts in the end? Yes, of course. Good showbiz, Lieutenant. The effect. And then off comes the head without spilling one single drop of blood. Now I call that showmanship, Lieutenant.
Holy shit. Is that Full Metal Jacket? I don't know.
The Gemini Killer from...
No, so Exorcist 3.
Exorcist 3.
Oh, the Believe in Pain speech, right?
Well, no, that's from Lieutenant Kinderman at the end of it. This was Brad Dourif's character. Stephen Dourif? Brad Dourif.
Brad.
Oh,
is the Gemini Killer.
Okay, I haven't seen that in ages, like 30
that
years probably.
That speech is creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I was sitting here, I had never seen it, and I looked over at Aaron and says, is this Dexter?
Wow. Good job, guys. Everybody had a little oomph in them. I'm proud of all of you. There. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I still can't believe I did Jack Nicholson. I'm kind of ashamed and a little proud. Come on. You guys felt it. I really could have taken his place if you think about it, right? All right. Well, one of our favorite bits of the show are outtakes. Some episodes we don't do them, but most episodes, if you've ever listened to The Hollywood Outsider, you know at the end of the episode, you get to hear outtakes, which means stuff that happens behind the scenes, 99% of it is absolutely natural. I think some people think we just fake and try to come up with stuff that's funny for the end of the show just to, no, these are just, we're complete idiots. Sometimes we get mad at each other. Sometimes it's just something dumb. Sometimes things just don't work out, whatever it is. We just end up with funny stuff that we put at the end. So here's some of our, here's a compiled list of a bunch of outtakes. Hopefully you'll leave this up with a nice smile on your face and remember that the guys at The Hollywood Outsider really, really appreciate you listening to the show every single week. Love you guys. We wouldn't do it if you weren't so enthusiastic, if you weren't so interested in the show. Remember, you can go to the website. That's thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've got a Facebook group where a lot of us get together every week and just bullshit about movies. It's a really fun group. They're all film and TV fans, man. They talk about anything. Might be a little too much Arrow talk sometimes, but hey, whatever's popular, you know? Be sure to check that out. Also, we're on Facebook. The page. Page is different than a group. I know it's confusing, but go to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. You go to the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you want. We're pretty much at. We're everywhere. We're taking over the world. Before you get too sick of my voice, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Outtakes to finish this episode off. Thanks again for listening, guys. We'll have another volume 2, possibly 3. We'll see how the holidays go. I mean, it really depends on how busy we all get at the end of the year. Right now, here's the outtakes from the earlier in the year. Hope you enjoy. And remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
What? Not buy Jew Bears? Come on, you had the throttle.
Bye. Next time you go to a theater.
Buy Jew Bears.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Skill, hey, gonna, and then just arcade.
Leak the lizard real quick. I'll be right back.
Go ahead. Molly calls it a lizard? That's not nice.
She calls it a Komodo dragon.
I'm not going to tell you my story now.
Good. You didn't want to hear it anyway. Okay.
Yes, Justin, it worked again.
Fucking asshole. Really, you're going to start there eating chips right before you fucking start hosting, you dipshit?
Now, Brian, try not to fuck up too much because he has to edit all of your screw-ups. So if you do it a lot, you're going to have a lot of work ahead of him. I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying.
All right, let's fuck this dog.
Pass.
I don't know. Let's see the dog.
And
love boat.
Ba-da-ba. Soon we'll be taking another run. Right,
sorry.
That works too. Whoa.
What's up? Chloe's calling.
Jack, Mr. Hastings won't let me go to the bathroom.
We're not doing what you said again.
Damn it!
I've rewatched seasons 1 and 2 of Game of Thrones, but I wanted to watch 3 before 4 gets started.
Gotcha.
I'm going to try to watch all 3 again.
Back to back to back?
Yeah.
Nice.
That's a lot of titty, man.
That's why I'm doing it.
All of it appropriate.
That is, of course it is. Of course it is.
Aaron sent me a text today, just randomly said balls deep, and said, I just wanted you to feel uncomfortable while you're working around kids.
Bring in the love. Bow, 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 bow. You gotta admit, just hearing that makes you want to make love.
I can't hear that song without thinking of Carlton from the Prince of Bel Air.
Oh, shit. I shouldn't have clapped. Sorry. Got the dogs riled up. A little less painful.
Please, less cock talk this week.
What?
Just a
that's
little
up
bit.
To you, homie. I've never started.
This was love week.
I get angry when people disagree with me. That's just a personality fault on mine. And
so we're assholes because we don't agree?
That's right. That's right. We're...
I've been in those shoes. You don't want your dad to say something that puts you in a pit of despair, you know?
I can't find it, dude. All I see is pictures of Hot Pockets.
Of Hot Pockets?
She's got Hot Pockets in her Facebook wall.
Is that what the girls are calling it now?
That's a vagina, Scott.
They feel
about the same.
It works for me.
It does. I put mine in the microwave for 2 minutes and it's warm.
That's what they'll call the remake of American Pie, Hot Pockets.
Oh, I like
it's
it.
Like, what's it like? It's like finger in a hot pocket.
Hot Pocket. Some guy's just fucking a microwave.
Would they use the idea? It's a lot cheaper and easier to make.
Would they use the little white slider thing?
Just don't fuck it right after you pull it out of the
No, you got to let it stand 1 minute. Just like you say. Does it make you gay if you have the meatballs version?
How do you simulate a hand job noise? Just trying to figure it out.
Why do we're in the same room. Why do we need to simulate the sound? This is the NPR version of the Hollywood Outsider.
Oh, God, can we make that?
Run through that Saturday Night Live skit. I like it when my balls rest on a hot stove.
My sweaty balls?
My sweaty balls.
I like how your balls smell.
This is the Hollywood.
Yeah, this goes.
So, it sounds more and more game show every time.
This is the Hollywood Outsider.
It sounds like it could be a game show, doesn't it?
Yeah, like you should walk out with one of those mics that's with a long, thin.
The big ball on the end of it.
Yeah.
And long. Here's your host, Aaron Peterson.
This is the Hollywood Outsider, and this is your game show opening.
Sorry.